Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We're all cooled off. So nice. We have come to chapter 9 in this book, which is called The Moon in Water. And Shohaku Okamura goes into a lot of detail in this about all the different places that Dogen spoke about the moon and in the water, and also all the different ways it has been understood. So if you think it's complicated, it's just because there's so many different ways of understanding it, that the moon is such a wonderful image. It's with us, irreversibly with us, and those times when it's full and shining into your back garden and flooding your own world with light, it becomes very mysterious. And so it makes a wonderful mystery image that has been used over and over in Zen. And certainly it is in chapter 9, or this ninth paragraph of Dogen's. When a person attains realization, it's like the moon's reflection in the water. The moon never becomes wet, and the water is never disturbed. That already is beautiful. The moon's reflection in water is when a person attains realization. The moon never becomes wet, and the water is never disturbed. Although the moon is a vast, great light, it is reflected in a drop of water. The whole moon and even the whole sky are reflected in a drop of dew on a blade of grass. Realization does not destroy the person, as the moon does not make a hole in the water. The person does not obstruct realization, as a drop of dew does not obstruct the moon in the sky. The depth is the same as the height. To investigate the significance of the length and brevity of time, we should consider whether the water is great or small, and understand the size of the moon in the sky. So this is the first time we've been talking about realization. Always a very tender subject, you know, for us. We talk about no attainment and try very hard not to be ambitious in our sitting or aim for some kind of a special experience. But realization does happen, and the happening is very important and very difficult to talk about. And so these images are efforts to point to the experience that is so untalkaboutable. The vast great light is reflected in a drop of water. You know, was it Kaz who titled his book of Dogen's work, Moon in a Dewdrop? It's quite wonderful. It means if we consider ourselves as a drop of dew on a blade of grass, still the moon is a part of our experience. We can't avoid it, really. It's always with us. So even the whole sky is reflected in that dewdrop. It means everything, the whole universe. And it doesn't destroy the person. The moon doesn't make a hole in the water. It doesn't change the water at all. We aren't hurt or changed by it in the way that we think. And we don't obstruct realization as the dew doesn't obstruct the moon in the sky. It's just all a very natural, seamless business, you could say. It's all happening without obstruction. Nothing gets in the way. Dogen says somewhere, everything in the universe is known. It's all right here, wherever we are. There's a long riff on the different Chinese characters, which I won't go into. And then he talks about the moon in water as emptiness and as the body. The part where Dogen says, when a person attains realization, it's like the moon's reflection in water. The moon never becomes wet and the water is never disturbed. He said, the image of the moon reflected in water has been used as a symbol of emptiness in many Buddhist scriptures. He says, he quotes the Vimalakirti scripture, and the image of the water, moon and water can also evoke the body. An example is a Chinese Zen master doing that. The Chinese master Doshin, day and night, whether walking, standing still, sitting, or lying down, if you continuously contemplate things in this way, you will know that your own body is like the moon in water, a reflection in a mirror, heat waves on a hot day, or an echo in an empty valley. You cannot say it has being, because even if you try to catch it, you cannot see its substance. You also cannot say it has no being, because it is clearly in front of your eyes. Okumura goes on to say, in Mahayana Buddhism and in the Chinese Zen tradition, all dharmas, all things, and the human body, which is a thing, are said to be like the moon and water. In this tradition, the human body is often compared to the moon in water, with illustrations to show the self is empty of both being and non-being. It's a simile for emptiness and wisdom, prajna paramita. Then he goes on to talk about another chapter of Shobo Genzo, where Dogen talks entirely about the moon and brings it up all through this chapter, because it was most likely Dogen's biggest thought about the moon. It's called Tsuki, T-S-U-K-I. And Dogen uses here the image of the moon as a symbol of the dynamic movement of the network of interdependent origination. This is the total function that includes the self and all dharma. Everything is working together. he quotes the Sutra of Golden Radiance. Shakyamuni Buddha says the true Dharma body of the Buddha is like empty space. Responding to things, it manifests its form. It is like the moon in water. Dogen comments on it, the thusness of like the moon in water is water moon. It is water thus, moon thus, thus within, within thus. Thus does not mean to be like. Thusness is thisness. This is very typical of Dogen to play with the words. Thusness is Tathagata. Tathagata means thus come or thus gone. Means both, really. And thisness means this, stuff, us, life as it is. So Tathagata and thisness are the same. That's how the moon is reflected in the water. Tathagata is reflected in the response, responding to things. So it's very active. It's about action. It's not an idea. It's how the whole is enacted. Thisness, he says, means concrete, definite, and each and everything. Then he has a bit about the moon and water as the middle way, which is Nagarjuna's teaching. He had a vast teaching about the middle way. You can posit one side and another side, but neither side, you can prove that neither side is true. The only way to talk about anything truly is in the middle part. The untalkaboutable part. You can't really parse it. In his, now I'm going to try to say this, Mulamad, Dayama Kakarika. Mula Madayama Kakarika. Nagarjuna Juno discusses the two truths, absolute and conventional truth, as the basis of his philosophy. He says, without relying on everyday common practices, relative truth, the absolute truth cannot be expressed. Without approaching the absolute truth, nirvana cannot be attained. We declare, says Nagarjuna, that whatever is relational origination is sunyata. It is a provisional name, a thought construction, for the mutuality of being, and indeed it is the middle path. So relational origination is the interdependent origination, the one that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about so much, how everything is connected. That if you have a page, it's connected to the tree it came from and the rain that came down and all the effort that went into making it and how it will end up back in the earth and then it will go, etc. So that kind of interdependence is throughout everything in life. There is nothing that is not affected by everything else. And shunyata is translated as emptiness. So relational origination is another word for the reality that is beyond any words, any conceptualization. It is a provisional name for absolute truth. Conventional truth refers to words and concepts and categories and thoughts we use in order to try to grasp this ungraspable reality. Seeing reality from both sides without clinging to either is the middle path. And you can see how easy it is to be clinging to one side or the other. I know people who have had experiences of the absolute and can't relate to things anymore. Nothing feels solid and real because it feels so big. But it's not a real experience unless it's imbued with the reality of everyday solidity of our life as it is. Our life itself is an expression of the absolute, you could say. So there's no separation, just as there's no separation between the light of the moon and the water. And the water, it's all connected. He says, the truth of the middle refers to seeing the reality of each and every being from both sides, both the side of emptiness and the side of temporal being. Side of emptiness, there is not. And the side of temporal being, there is. We live both ways. So then he goes into his own life and uses it as an explanation. He says, Shohaku has no substance since he's just a collection of causes and conditions that give form to his body. His body and mind have no separate owner and operator and are always changing according to conditions within and outside of them. Yet, Shohaku is here as an empty collection of causes and conditions that comprise his body and mind. He is Japanese, he's a Buddhist, he is a priest, he's teaching Buddhism because that's the responsibility of a Buddhist priest. Shohaku is here, but he does not really exist as a fixed entity because neither his body nor his mind contain the totality of Shohaku. He is simply a collection of different elements, just as a car is made up of different parts. Although no single part of a car is a complete car, a car consists of nothing other than a collection of its parts. And although Shohaku is here, he's nothing but a collection of parts or elements. This Shohaku is discussing Dogen. But he learned what he's talking about from studying many Buddhist texts in the past. What he is doing now is simply a result of what he did in the past. It's simply a collection of the results of his past experiences and circumstances, or karma. His knowledge and words are gifts from the society in which he was raised and educated. This explanation of the nature of Shohaku is an example of the truth of the middle. So he then talks about three truths. The first, and applies them to the first sentences of the Genjo Koan. The truth of expedience, the truth of emptiness, and the truth of the middle, the actual practice of the Buddha way as the reality of our lives. Based on the teachings of the first two truths, And yet it goes beyond viewing reality from either of their perspectives. Practicing in this way transcends both abundance, as Dogen says in there, and efficiency. So he is telling us that the moon in the water refers to reality as the truth of the middle. He says, I think Dogen wants to show us that we must live, practice, and perform all of our activities in accordance with the first two truths, using the transitory body and mind that each of us has. He's saying that when we practice in this way, we live in accordance with the truth of the middle. When we encounter these truths in Dogen's writing, it's important to be able to refer to its meaning in Mahayana philosophy, yet we shouldn't cling to any logical or philosophical concept when we study Dogen. His teachings are meant to reveal to us the reality of life immediately within our day-to-day lives. Maybe that is, there are, there's a good deal more. I'll talk about the moon as the self, which is the next part of it. So as you can see, it's got many, many different ways of turning it around and looking at it. And it's just the moon. And us. That's all it is. He's quoting a Chinese Zen master, Panshan Baoji. The perfect circle of the mind moon is alone. Its light swallows 10,000 things. The light does not illuminate objects. Neither do objects exist. The light and objects both cease to exist. What is this? So Dogen says, one mind is all dharmas, and all dharmas are one mind. He's quoting another teacher. This is Dogen. Therefore, the mind is all things. All things are one mind. Because the mind is the moon, the moon is the moon. Because all things that are the mind are without exception the moon, the entire universe is the entire moon. The whole body is the whole moon. Within the before and after three and three in the 10,000 years of a moment, which one is not the moon? The sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha that are our body, mind, and environments are all within the moon. Our body, mind, and world. Coming and going within the cycle of birth and death are both within the moon. The ten directions world is the up and down, the left and right of the moon. The present activities of our daily lives are the bright 100 grasses within the moon and the bright ancestral teacher's mind within the moon. So he says we can speak, also speak, this is Uchiyama, or Shohaku actually, we can also speak of this reality as the reality that exists before we separate it into self and other. This is a very important point. Before we separate into self and other, before we begin to think and define and decide whether we like something, our very first raw experience. That's the kind of mind that Dogen is talking about. The reality of our lives. Ruchiyama Roshi called this the unity of self and all things, original self or universal self, the reality that's manifested in our Zazen practice. Dogen Zenji calls this reality the moon. In Zazen, the entire universe becomes moonlight, and the entire body of the self is the entire moon. All things are the entire moon, and we are born, live, and die within the moon. When we live in accordance with reality, our ordinary daily activities become the moon. This is the reality that Dogen Zenji said manifests when a person attains realization. So I'll stop there. There's time for questions or discussion. It's a lot. No, it's a lot. Jeffrey?
So, I'm a very visual person, and one of the students in talking about this said that Dogen is like a master of cubism, which I found very helpful, because when I think of a Picasso face, and I think of how he tried at once, tried to have the side and the front and all these different angles. And that's the point he's making about Dogen, is that he comes at it from all these different angles, really trying to assist us in understanding this.
Yes.
Really difficult.
Yes.
And I found that to be, for myself, very helpful. And I thought anybody else who maybe is a kind of a visual thinker, that might be helpful.
That's so great.
I thought for me it just kind of lit up something in me.
Yes.
I went, oh, yeah. That's
the nose is over here and the eye is over here, and it's,
Nagarjuna's, his arguments, not this, not that. Well, I just find it a lot easier visualizing this rather than the argument.
Yes.
For myself, that's my path, I guess.
Yes.
This is something, I don't know when the first time you began with that particular study of the moon, but it continues to, I continue to look at it from these different
angles. Yes. Well, he does such a wonderful job in this book of giving us not just one interpretation of Dogen, but gives us different ways of turning it around, and I don't think we understand it in an intellectual way, but we begin to feel it, feel what he's talking about, how the absolute, so-called absolute and relative, and the two truths are really just one truth, and these are the images that show us how that is true. In the middle way of seeing those things.
It's required, I've read, is a flexible mind, serviceable mind.
Yes.
And I think that all these different ways of talking about it serves us really well to understanding how it has to be flexible.
Yeah, absolutely. every minute.
and one can, because it's very easy to see in this world the inflexible mind and how it works. In others, the deep study is to see how it works in yourself.
Yes.
Where you get stuck.
Yes, we all get stuck, and help each other get unstuck. if we're lucky. Anything else? Well, this is to take home and ponder, sit with. It's almost 8 o'clock, so we should, in any case, stop until next week. John is coming again. He felt a little sorry about the talk he gave last week and wants to come back and do better. So he needs to practice, he said. He wants to practice, and I encourage him to do it. So I'll come next week also, but he'll give the talk. So next week is the meeting also after.
Yes, a very important Sangha business meeting to make decisions about how we're going to handle the big rent increase. You see, friends.
Does everybody know about that? They raised the rent for our Saturday sit to the ceiling, and we can't afford it. There's no way. So we tried to talk to them about it, but they are adamant. They say they like to use this space for Saturdays, so they are asking everybody to depart. I think Wednesday group will have to do something else too.
Well, we haven't heard back about, we made an offer on rates for the Saturday temporarily. So we're still in the negotiating phase, but it doesn't look that promising. Anyway, so the Tuesday night rate is just doubled. So that, I think since our donation was so low, I can probably handle that. So we have to decide whether we want two sites, one for Tuesdays and someplace else for Saturday, or if we want to research an alternate site for everything. And then following Saturday is Full Day Sit, yes, following Saturday the 14th is the here, we're going to pay their asking price. Possibly, unless they agree to a lower rate. $250 for community hall and meeting room for the whole day. So,
okay.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
So 2 weeks ago, when I brought up following one of Andrew's Dharma talks, this issue, a couple of people stepped forward, one with a wonderful text of ideas, and another person who came up and just spoke with me verbally. And I would hope that next time we meet, when we think about this business meeting, it's really to talk about the welfare of our Sangha. And so those of you who, like myself, have benefited so much from our opportunity to meet, and especially meet on week, those Saturdays once a month. It's a really wonderful opportunity for you to sit with us and talk about ways your opportunity to contribute to this discussion is invaluable. So I hope just everybody stays for the business meeting so we can talk about alternatives and options.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we do make a big point of it adjourning by 9:15. So.
And we always do. So far, so good.
Be over committee. So.
Yes. Questions? Let's do our 1 minute sit.
Mm-hmm.